Now, back to the Eric Stewart Show on WMAL.
According to the U.S. Census Bureau, the number of U.S. residents 65 or older will grow from 35 million in 2000, 16 years ago now, folks, to nearly 73 million in 2030. So it's going to double those 65 and older between 16 years ago and 14 years from now. We're about halfway through that, right? We're on our way to 73 million. That's a pretty big demographic shift. You've heard that calculation that every day somebody is turning 65. Somebody to the tune of 10,000 people a day. Every day in this country, someone is turning 65, 10,000 times over. Now, I'm going to give you some directions here, okay? About aging in place, which is what? Again, 95% of people will do this. They'll stay in their houses. They won't move. You could rent an apartment somewhere. You can go into an age-exclusive community. A Leisure World, for instance, in Montgomery County would be an example here. A continuing care retirement community is an option. I'm going to speak to each of these a little bit more in a minute. Okay, and I'm going to talk a little bit later about a house I listed that I just put on the market that happens to be a single-family home that the owners didn't want to leave. They added a 1,000-square-foot addition on the first floor, master bedroom addition that was perfect for the kids to live in the original colonial and mom and dad to live there too. Now, do you understand what I mean by that? Meaning, mom and dad raised their kids in a house, a colonial that was built in the early mid-70s. The kids grew up, went to college, went on and got married and had kids of their own. Mom and dad decided they wanted to stay in their home, but over time they decided they didn't want to keep climbing the stairs up to the second floor. So they added a 1,000-square-foot addition off to the side of the house so they could stay in their home. Now, that property at 9457 Copenhaver Drive, I put that house on the market, and I got an offer on it almost immediately because it provided a first-floor living space for someone, and it also gives flexibility. Think of it this way. If you and your kids were ever going to live together, if you have that relationship, that kind of a relationship, a home like this would be perfect. It's an intergenerational home. I'll discuss that more in a moment. I hear this all the time in my business. I hear people talking about buying or selling. They'll say to me, I've looked around. I would sell what I have for me to find something else. I'm going to probably spend almost the same amount, and I'll have about a third of the space that I have now, so why would I want to do that, right? You know what the cost is. You're willing to sacrifice some of the luxuries because you have what you know. You know it already. You've been in the home. You're comfortable. You like what you have. Why do we age in place? It's because it's familiar. We know what we've got. We know the smells. We know the trees. We know the neighbors. Even if over time we lose the people that we started with because they've moved away or otherwise, we get to know the location and the relationships over time. There are transitions. Earlier this year, I sold a home. It's the fifth family in this house. Now, it's on the street where I live. I grew up in a house. I bought it from my parents. It's the house I grew up in. I've known five different families living in that one house. I just sold that house again for the fifth family. The sixth family just moved in. Think of your home as a tool. Let's think of it for just a moment. Take yourself out of the house and think of it as a tool. Your home is a tool. When my wife and I bought my parents' house that I grew up in, we put an addition on. I had five kids. Is it going to be too much space soon? Uh-huh. Yeah. Is it already? Well, if I'm really honest with myself, it was too much space the day I moved into it. I don't really use it all. The majority of us use, you know, four or five rooms in a house. And I mean us, meaning you and me. We tend to use a kitchen, a bathroom, the bedroom, and maybe a family room. And then we have the what ifs. What if the kids come back for Christmas? What if we have a Bible study at our house? Or we need space for 30 people to come over for a get-together? What if we need a big backyard for a party? It's these things. They're options for us. But we still have the right sizing need. Now, sure, my kids have bedrooms and, you know, we've got a dining room. But how often do I use my dining room for dining? Not very often. Even the living room does not get used that often. I want to tell you a quick story. There was a house that I went into in 1990. I was referred by a real estate attorney to go over and see this fella's house. He had passed away. And sadly, but he had lived in this house, and it was a Sears bungalow that was built probably in 1940. He had ordered it through a catalog. It was made with steel 2x4s, not wood, because it was a later version of that original Sears bungalow that you could have shipped out by train. I walked into this house. I'd never seen anything like it. The front door opened as I unlocked it, and there I am. There are these walls of newspaper. These were literally 3.5 foot tall walls that he had built out of newspaper. As you walked in, the house didn't have a foyer. It was a small, modest home. It had the living room on the left, the dining room on the right, the kitchen was towards the back, and there were a couple of bedrooms. This man had created a means to keep himself from going into his living room or his dining room. You had to shuffle from the front door to the back where the kitchen was, okay? And then he built walls of newspaper to block the exits out of the kitchen, except to his bedroom and the bathroom. Essentially, he had right-sized inside of his own home. He literally had 4 spaces he could go into, even though his house had more spaces. It was kind of like one of those 1950s Jerry Lewis movies where the living room had everything covered with sheets. You know, it was supposed to be like, you know, Jerry Lewis meets Frankenstein kind of movie. In the dining room, the table was covered. All the stuff is covered. It was this guy's willingness, his desire to stay where he was. He tried to figure out a way to make it work for him so he could continue to live there for the rest of his life. And he did. And it worked for him. And that's okay. The basement was wet. There was water in the basement. He had found a way to avoid facing the reality that he didn't need the space. He didn't want to move. He was willing to do that. And folks, this is not a moral decision. We're not right or wrong to decide what we're going to do here. You simply have a choice of what you want. What is your preferable future? What do you want your life to look like? This is where I hear a lot of, I'm not ready yet. Thank you. Okay, I'm consistently faced with this. I'm not ready yet. When I speak at retirement communities, you know, inevitably there might be 20 people, there might be 60 people that are there. And a lot of folks face the same issue. And sometimes it's husband and wife. You know, the husband's ready and he's been ready for years. And the wife is saying, no way, you can take me out of here in a pine box. When you're married, you just got to live with what you have, right? You got to make the decision, make the best out of what you've got. If I'm speaking with you about possibly making a move and you feel like you're not ready yet, the majority of that, the inability actually to deal with the stuff that we have or really to find the motivation to change your life, that motivation is something that sometimes it's intangible. It becomes difficult for us to put our hands around. There are moments where it comes up and it's so strong and so clear and I have to get out of my house. How can we find the motivation to stay in our homes and live well? So I created this tongue-in-cheek right-sizing bill of rights with my friend Andrew Morgan some years ago. Now, some of these are you have the right to feel to not feel overwhelmed. You have the right not to feel overwhelmed. You open the closet door and have to wrestle with the towels to get one? Hey, you have the right to have a safe and a secure home, the right to a clutter-free home. You have the right to open your closet without the fear of being crushed. You have the right to throw away your old copies of National Geographic, for goodness sake. You have the right to right-sized living, to enjoy your home again. We don't have to move. We don't have to move to right-size our homes, to right-size our lives. We want to find the right motivation to right-size. Something that it's kind of like an elevator speech, something that we can boil down. And when someone says, why are you doing all this? You can tell them, well, here's why. 1, 2, 3. Here are the reasons. Let's focus on 7 areas of wellness that each one of us enjoys. Have you ever heard of the 7 areas of wellness? Each one of us has 7 areas of wellness in our lives, whether it's physical wellness or social wellness or environmental wellness. There are 7 areas, all of them found in the Right Sizing Guide, free if you want to download a copy at ericstewartgroup.com or call us and we'll mail you a copy absolutely free at 800-900-9104. Each one of us has to evaluate where we are in each one of these 7 areas of wellness. Are we healthy or not? What can we do differently to live our lives in a way that is healthy? And it's really the key to discovering our through line, our our preferable future. We have to start with, where are we within these seven areas? I cover these intellectual, physical, social, vocational, emotional, spiritual, and environmental evaluations. What do you do? How do you figure this out? Maybe you stop and you think intellectually, am I really enjoying my life right now, or have I stalled out? If you're intellectually stimulated in your life, do you have specific topics or skills that you're trying to learn more about? Okay, what are your goals? What's your preferable future in this area? My mother decided at 48 she wanted to become a chaplain. She went to Wesley Theological Seminary. She studied for 4 years and got her master's degree in divinity. And then she ended up at Shady Grove Hospital for 12 years as a chaplain. But she started that at 48. Let's continue right after this brief break.